T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
It's time for your favorite show. The Weekend Report is on the radio.
Thank you, Barry Woods. And yes, indeed, the Weekend Report is on your radio. Thank you for joining us. My name is Tony Colombo in studio this week with producer Carl Middleman.
Hello.
Great to see you.
Nice to see you.
And, of course, my partner Chris Arps is connected via the marvel of modern technology at the Arps compound as we continue to practice proper social distancing. Chris, how are you doing?
Are we still counting votes?
Yeah, I think they're still counting votes.
Okay, all right.
I think they're still.
You know, they count them every year.
I think they're going to be. I think you're going to be counting for a couple weeks at this rate. You know what? Let's just dive right in. How you feeling?
Dive right in.
How you feeling about what has transpired this week and what we're looking forward to next week? How you feeling in general?
Well, I'm feeling like a lot of Americans are right now. I have extreme election fatigue. I am like most Republican conservative voters. I'm very concerned about what seems like fraud and shenanigans that are going on in these states like Pennsylvania and Arizona and North Carolina. I said a couple of days after the election that I think that Joe Biden will probably be the next president. I have not seen enough evidence right now of voter fraud or shenanigans to overturn the election. But there are a lot of accusations that are coming out right now, especially with these voting machines and how they may have been manipulated to change votes from Joe Biden. From Donald Trump to Joe Biden. So we've got a long way to go still, Tony. Long way to go.
No, I mean, it definitely looks like, you know, Joe Biden is going to be the next president. I think that, the Trump campaign has a long way, very uphill battle to prove otherwise. I, like you, probably right now think that Joe Biden is going to be the next president. But do you think he's going to be the next president because it's difficult to prove the amount of voter fraud that would need to be proved? Or do you think he's going to be next president because that voter fraud wasn't there?
I think there's a lot of factors that are weighing against President Trump and that are helping Joe Biden. One of them is the media, who have basically anointed him as the president elect. They are giving him all of the respect that a person that's won the presidency should have right now. So they are legitimizing the election. So I think that's going to be an uphill battle for him, Tony.
Help me remember to
are you exasperated?
No, I'm trying to remember myself. I've been trying to remember this all week. In 2000, when we were going through, the only thing that we can compare this with, it's obviously not an apples-to-apples comparison, but it's, you know, the only thing that we have in modern history to compare this to as far as a contested election for days and weeks after election day.
5 weeks.
And I don't remember the media going out of their way to call the presidency. I mean, they did sort of originally on election night, you know, they gave Florida to Al Gore, but then they redacted that on election night and then it went on. And I don't remember the media or other politicians, you know, or the country in general saying, well, we'll finish counting, we'll announce a winner, and then we'll let the courts decide if that gets, if that winner gets taken away. I don't remember them calling either Al Gore or George Bush president-elect, like we're calling Joe Biden now president-elect. I don't remember them awarding, saying, you know, putting the big check mark and projecting that either Al Gore or George Bush has won the presidency. Again, aside from what happened immediately on election night, and then that was all then redacted pretty quickly. Am I misremembering, or is this being handled completely different? I don't remember weeks of going by of calling one or the other the president-elect. I remember it being a thing that we're not going to do that until all of this legal activity is resolved.
Tony, I don't think you're misremembering. I think we have two different situations. In 2000, we had Florida come down to 500 votes. That was just one state. So I think when you have a situation like that, you really can't call a particular person president-elect and just move on like nothing's happening. You know, all of that had to play out in the courts. And then, of course, the Supreme Court finally put a stop to the vote counting. I think in 2020, what you have in this election, you've got four or five states that are in play. The votes that are being disputed are way beyond just 500 votes. You have thousands of votes. And, you know, as we said earlier in the segment, I just don't think that you're going to find enough voter fraud, dead people voting, a funny absentee ballot that's going to make up for tens of thousands of votes. The only real shot that the president has is in Pennsylvania, for example, where they allowed so many absentee ballots to come in after the election to be counted. There you have a potential of tens of thousands of votes maybe being disqualified. And the allegation that seems very serious right now with these voting machines, where votes seem to have been manipulated to go to Joe Biden. Those are the president's really only real chances of overturning this election, in my opinion.
Do you think do you personally feel like it's possible or probable that there is that much voter fraud, but it's just very difficult to prove? Or do you think there was some there, but it probably wasn't enough to actually change the results of the election? Just your personal gut feeling from being a part of, you know, watching elections from basically the inside for so long. Is there something that doesn't pass the smell test for you or not?
You know, Tony, with 2020 being the type of year that it's been where anything is possible, I would not be surprised at widespread vote fraud. And not just because of the crazy year that we've had, also because of what we've seen these last 4 years as Donald Trump being president. There is a such thing as a deep state. There were people within the government that did not want Donald Trump to become president. And if he did become president, they were going to sabotage his presidency from within. This is not some theory or some novel. This is true. We've seen the emails of the FBI agents plotting together. So I think if the people in the deep state would go to measures like that to keep Donald Trump from becoming president, it would not surprise me if there was a collusion involved with a bunch of people to make sure that voting machines were manipulated to make sure that Joe Biden won. You know, it's very curious that Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein, both San Francisco liberals, you know, powerful people within the Democratic Party, their families have ownership stakes in these voting machine software. It's coincidence? I don't know.
maybe, but it doesn't make me comfortable. It wouldn't make
me at all.
It wouldn't make me comfortable if the voting machines were, you know,
Halliburton
or Donald or Trump. You know, if they were the Trump Corporation's voting machines. You know, I wouldn't. It's not so. It's not a Democrat thing. I don't like politicians, you know, having their hands in the software that decide elections, period.
Yeah, and Tony, and there's reports coming out where these machines can be manipulated by hand to be able to thwart votes, to throw votes to other candidates. It's not some highly technical thing that, you know, it has to be done. You know, there it's like a flaw in this machine that it can be manipulated to change votes.
Right before we started this conversation, recording this show, I was watching a press conference with Nancy Pelosi, and she was being asked basically with a smaller margin of a lead of a majority in the House, do you plan to negotiate a little bit more or sort of soften on some of your positions moving forward because it's going to be more difficult to, you know, kind of push through your agenda with such a slight advantage in the House? And her answer was basically absolutely not. We own the House. We own the White House. Our agenda is stronger and more powerful than ever. And no, there's not going to be any negotiating with anyone thanks to all the power that we have. Typical gross Nancy Pelosi behavior, yeah. if you ask me. What do you think of that statement by the speaker, and what do you think are her chances of retaining that speakership?
I think Nancy Pelosi has to put up the brave front, the brave face that she's still the leader of the party. But she, like many Democrats in leadership and Democrats around the country, are deeply disappointed that they didn't add seats to the House, which they expected to do. They were expected to take over the Senate, which they didn't. And there was supposed to be a blue wave all around the country. And we saw the exact opposite when you see state legislatures all around the country going red. So I think she's trying to put up the brave face. The moderates in her party are going to have a lot more power and influence. And I don't think the AOC, the squad, who will have a new member this fall with Cori Bush, are not going to sit down and take this as good soldiers. No. They believe that they are responsible for helping to get Joe Biden elected. They brought out a lot of young progressives, and they're going to want their pound of flesh.
Yes, they are. And they have said that exact thing. So, And it's pretty fascinating to actually watch what's happening in the Democratic Party. This week we saw in the same 24-hour period, James Clyburn and other more traditional Democrats that have been around for a long time saying things like the defund the police message is the reason that they didn't perform as well as you said that they were projected to and they were supposed to. There's, like you mentioned, there was supposed to be this big blue wave. And James Clyburn says that there wasn't because of the sloganeering, his word, and the extreme progressive ideas like defund the police. He said that he called it foolishness. And a lot of other more traditional Democrats rallied around that message, and some outgoing House Democrats said that we lost our election because of things like defund the police and these more progressive ideas. But on the same day that James Clyburn said that, AOC and the quote unquote squad members put out a memo saying what you just said, that the reason that they held the House and the reason they won the White House is because of their extreme progressive ideas. And either get on board or get out of here because this is the party now. There's a big fraction in the Democratic Party. Those two ideas are going to be tough to mesh.
Yeah, I think James Clyburn is circling the wagons around his leader. He's in leadership because Nancy Pelosi is in leadership. But I also think James Clyburn is looking ahead. He knows that traditionally in the first term of a president, in the midterm election, that party that's in power usually loses House seats. The Democrats have a very slim margin. So I think he sees the House slipping away if they keep talking about defunding the police or defunding the Pentagon, as Cori Bush tweeted out. And I think that any lead that they have in the Senate, if they do have the one vote majority by the vice president to be able to cast a vote, I think they're looking at that slipping away and the Republicans taking two or three seats in the midterm election if they continue with this far left progressive agenda.
So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take our first break here in just a second. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We're going to talk to our friend Pastor John Michael Brown, our buddy Mike Ferguson, all in the next hour of the show. A little bit later this hour, we're going to talk to Virginia Cruda from the Daily Caller. And in just a moment, we are going to talk to the senior White House correspondent from the Daily Caller, Christian Daytok. This is I want to specifically talk to Christian about what we touched on at the beginning of this segment. I have said all along that I'm listening to the president and the Republicans' message that something fishy happened on election night, and there's suspicion, and we have reason to believe that we have, you know, legal standing to show that there was illegal votes cast. I'm listening because I covered the election as I have many other elections. And it was weird. Things happened that night that were very irregular. However, I need to see the proof. I need to see some evidence. And I want to ask Christian if the Republicans at this point have presented any evidence. He follows the president. He's with them every day there at the White House. And maybe he can answer some of those questions for us. We'll find out when we get back. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Weekend Report on 97.1 FM Talk.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back to The Weekend Report, 97.1 FM Talk. Tony Colombo here with producer Carl Middleman.
Hello.
And my partner Chris Arps. And
hey.
As I mentioned in that last segment, joining us on the line now is Christian Daytok. He is the senior White House correspondent for the Daily Caller. And I'm sure that is that's a very exciting job on a regular day. But right now and throughout the last 4 years, being there at the White House, I'm sure, is the gift that keeps on giving. So we appreciate your time, Christian. Thanks for joining us today. How's it going?
I'm good. Tony, Chris, thanks for having me. Looking forward to speaking with you guys about where we are in terms of determining the election results.
Yeah, for sure. Before we dive into the specifics of everything going on, Can you just kind of paint us a picture of what your daily work schedule looks like, being a part of the White House press corps, being, you know, the senior White House correspondent for a major news organization? What's that like just in general, especially, you know, with everything that's happening this year?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously with coronavirus, this is not how we'd be normally operating. But on a normal day, I'm getting up around 5 a.m., jumping on Twitter, seeing if the president has tweeted anything overnight, and then just going through my source list, trying to touch in with every one of my officials who I communicate with on a routine basis, see if there are any stories that I can get ahead of before either going to the White House or, given that it's, again, coronavirus, just setting up shop here in my apartment in D.C. and plugging into the day for the day. Obviously, there's a lot of uncertainty that we're dealing with right now.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully it's looking like we're going to get to the end of the tunnel sooner than later and just sort of, you know, move on into 2021. I think we're all done with 2020 at this point.
Phew, man, you got that right. A lot of people have said, you know, that the ferocity of the president has really lightened over the last few days, and they point to that as maybe a sign of giving up and basically maybe starting to say that there's not as much to fight for and it doesn't look good. Is there any truth to that? Has the president not been as vocal in the last several days or maybe last week, 10 days, as he normally has been? Or is the message just as strong and not being maybe reported as such?
In some aspects, it has shifted. In others, like his Twitter account, it's basically stayed par for the course. And I don't think the word given up or the phrase given up is apt in this scenario. But moved on is perhaps more accurate. We're all seeing the lawsuits and where the count is. And I think more so than giving up on fighting for his supporters and fighting for the presidency, Trump is now looking toward 2024. And this is from conversations I've had, again, with White House officials and what other outlets have reported. It seems like they've read the writing on the wall. They want to continue this fight to show to the base that he's not giving up. But in reality, they're trying to position themselves to maintain control over the party and be a voice for, you know, the silent majority or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's what Trump's favorite term for his base is. And try and, you know, be a thorn in Joe Biden's side for the next 4 years and position himself for yet another White House run.
Mm-hmm. Talking to senior White House correspondent Christian Daytok from The Daily Caller. Go ahead, Chris.
Christian, what would you say is the general mood of the White House staff? And is there any notable foreign leaders around the world that have not yet congratulated Vice President-elect Joe Biden?
I'm sure there are some leaders around the world who have not reached out to President-elect Biden yet. Obviously, some of the president's closest allies and America's closest allies, whether they are, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson, Canadian PM Justin Trudeau, a who's who of Western leaders have all reached out and have either had actual substantive conversations or at least issued statements on that win. Now, to your first question, Chris, I think the general mood in the White House, at least among the mid-level staff, is sort of confused and a little tired, to be honest. It's it's strange because there are certainly
I think you could say that about the
country. Yeah, exactly. There are certainly certain senior level officials who want to just say, we're going to win. We believe the president won. We're getting ready for his second administration. But when the campaign itself and when the president is, you know, they're getting ready to start this new chapter, it's not necessarily fair to some of those people. And we saw reports about John McEntee, he's the personnel chief over at the White House, threatening to fire officials, especially lower level officials, if they start looking for new work. I think that definitely makes people feel uneasy about just going into the White House on a day to day basis. And, you know, my own opinion is I don't think that's fair. If hypothetically, you're a Republican official, you care about the strength of the party, you care about the people that you work with, you should be helping them get jobs somewhere else in government or at least in the private sector, certainly not hamstringing them from going about and trying to find a source of income so that they can continue to pay rent here in the DMV because it's outrageously expensive. I think that is probably the most shocking storyline we've seen come out of the post-election cycle. And I'm hoping that's going to change pretty soon. But the general mood is confused, a little dejected, and I think, like we talked about earlier, just ready to move on to that next chapter.
Go ahead, Chris.
You know, Christian, before Veterans Day, the president hadn't been seen in 5 days. Do you think that was a calculated move by the attorneys for him to be silent, or do you think the president was brooding? What's your general assessment?
I think it's a little bit of both. Obviously, we know when the president holds press conferences, he doesn't always stick to the script or campaign rallies. And there were reports that he might be going around the country, especially to Georgia, to campaign ahead of the special Senate election, both of the special Senate elections down there. But I think you're right. There is a legal aspect. They do have all these outstanding lawsuits. And just given President Trump's demeanor and tone and how he operates in the public sphere, he thinks of himself as his best spokesperson. They don't want him saying anything that could potentially get these lawsuits thrown out sooner than later. Again, it is the president's right until these states certify to fight for the people that voted for him. But ultimately, these really don't have a whole lot of hope of overturning any of the votes. We have these sworn affidavits, especially up in Michigan. I think Kayleigh McEnany was talking about they had some around 250 pages of sworn affidavits. But I read through those, and the majority of them seem to be complaints about, the demeanor of the other election observers or the fact that some of the poll watchers were wearing Black Lives Matter shirts. Nothing about people tearing up ballots or trying to, stamp in old dates like that. So even if there were minor fraud cases, and this is purely hypothetical,
right,
even if there were minor fraud cases in some of these polling jurisdictions, they don't amount to a large enough conspiracy to overturn the results of the elections in those big battleground states that the president is trailing Joe Biden.
Now, that is the kind of information that, that I have been looking for since election night, because I mentioned before we had you on in the last segment, and I've said this since election night, I covered this election as I have many elections for the radio station here, and this election night in 2020 and what transpired immediately following was very irregular. There was a lot of weird things that happened, which makes me suspicious. So you've got my attention when you say, look, this was weird. There's a lot of questionable things happening here, and we're going to look into it, and we're going to file these lawsuits. I'm paying attention, and I am agreeing with you. But at some point, you've got to show me and everyone the evidence. I need information, and I know that I'm not, I'm not entitled to know the evidence before the court cases happen and the lawsuits. But at some point, you're going to have to provide us with some proof of the fraud that you are alleging. And so far, I haven't seen anything. Have you heard any of the that information about Michigan is exactly the kind of stuff that I'm talking about. Have you heard anything from any of these other lawsuits, anything from the White House that either here is some proof or some evidence or a timeline on when that evidence is going to be provided? Because you go another week or two like we are now, and the people that haven't already moved on are going to definitely have moved on. Have you heard anything, any details from the inside of these lawsuits?
So the answer to your question in the shortest terms possible is no. We have a lot of allegations, but like you just enumerated, no hard evidence of a grasp or a large overarching conspiracy to steal the election away from President Trump. And I think your point is accurate, that there comes a point to where they're actually doing more damage to their cause, whether it's rallying for those special elections in Georgia or the midterm elections and helping Republicans possibly take back the House in 2022, or even a potential presidential run for President Trump or whoever's at the top of the ticket in 2024. You can't just keep beating the same drum and saying we have the evidence and then not providing any evidence. I think the allegations are fair. People, given the way the political climate is charged and how both parties were talking about the problems we'd be having in this election because of coronavirus and because of all of these unprecedented issues we're dealing with right now, that was to be expected. But ultimately, it's, you know, and I hate this colloquialism, but it's time to put up or shut up. Yeah. Because they're going to start doing more damage in their cause.
Do you have a timeline on any of that, Christian? Like when we can expect these cases to be heard? And, you know, we did get some information this week from a sort of a minor lawsuit that was won by the Trump campaign. It didn't really change anything, so it's not that big of a deal. But at least it was, you know, something happening. Do we know when some of these other cases may be resolved or we get some answers?
You know, as for a timeline on the outstanding lawsuits, I am totally in the dark. I think that's going to be up to those regional judges. To your point, I mean, they've won some of these suits in Pennsylvania. They've lost some. They lost one in Michigan. They lost one in Georgia. So just circling back on where we were before, it is, you know, totally legal and totally within the president's rights to file these lawsuits. And there are some legitimate complaints in there. But again, when you're writing on Twitter and you're publicly stating, you know, on these press calls that there is widespread fraud, but you're not putting the evidence up there, it's only hurting yourself in these cases that are outstanding in these different states. So I would assume that we will continue to get suits filed between now and just, you know, early December, whenever all the states have to certify their elections. But, you know, come December 5th, when I want to say Georgia is the first of these battleground states that are in question, they'll have to certify after the recount. That's probably going to be when this all ends. And on top of that, I would expect the president to announce his reelection bid shortly thereafter, if not almost immediately after the first state certify. Yeah.
That's amazing. Talking to just a couple minutes left here with Christian Daytok. He's the senior White House correspondent with the Daily Caller. Chris, you got another question?
Yeah, I do. Christian, as you said, you know, the president has every right to legally contest this election until the states certify the election. But if you hear the media reports, he's refusing to concede. You're there at the White House every day. Is the Pentagon or military officers going to need to escort the president out of the Oval Office on January 20th?
You know, I know that was sort of a conspiracy that was bandied about a lot this fall and this summer. I do not expect anything to come even close to requiring a military escort or Secret Service escort or whatever it might be to get the president out of the Oval. I mean, again, based on the people that I'm talking to and based on the peers at the White House, what they're reporting about how the president wants to run again in 2024 and he wants to be the face of the Biden resistance for the next 4 years, he's not going to do anything to lose himself votes. And now I know we just talked about how these lawsuits might eventually be hurting their own case, but, you know, refusing to hand over power, refusing to take part in the inauguration, that's a totally different ballgame than, you know, filing these election lawsuits. So Chris, no, I don't expect anything like that take place. And, you know, thankfully, to be honest, because I mean, this is America and, you know, this is a democracy. This isn't China. That is a whole new page in American history if we have to have the military come in and remove an ousted president from power. I don't think that's a story that anyone wants to be covering here in D.C.
Christian, I agree with you, but, you know, I think the president may skip the inauguration, though.
We'll see about that. Again, we don't even know what the inauguration is going to look like in January.
That's true.
Given coronavirus and given the focus that President-elect Biden and even the current members of the task force are placing on a potential big winter wave, I'm hearing reports that, you know, Biden might be renting a barge out in the Potomac and they'll do a very socially distant inauguration. So I would think the president might go. You never know what President Trump's going to do at the end of the day. So we'll have to wait and see. But I'm hoping we can have an inauguration ceremony because, again, it'll be fun to go. I wasn't covering the White House 4 years ago, so that'll be a first for me. And it'll just be sort of a return to normalcy, not necessarily from what President Trump has done during his time, because he has done a lot of good. But just given how crazy 2020 is, it will feel like we're moving on to the new year. And even though coronavirus is still around, it's just a thing that we can sort of all come together and say, hey, this is America. We can unite and we can beat this thing and get the economy going again, because I don't know if people will really stand for another 4 to 6 weeks of lockdowns. The madness needs to end at some point, but that's a conversation for another day.
Christian,
amen, brother.
Before we let you go, just to you've sat down with the president one-on-one. You've spoke with him personally. How, from what you have gained from him as it just as a person, his demeanor, his personality, how difficult is it for him to admit, if this all goes the way it appears that it's going, to admit defeat, to actually admit defeat and shake Joe Biden's hand and walk out of the White House? It doesn't seem like the president is built to concede anything. What's he like? What's that like in person?
I think it might be, if not the most difficult thing, certainly one of the most difficult things he'll ever have to do in his life. And you hit the nail on the head. He's not built to accept losing. And, you know, in his business career, he's leveraged losses into ability to push down debt through the legal system. And I, you know, being 100% honest, I don't know if he will shake Joe Biden's hand. Coronavirus is one thing. Let's not forget the fact that he is very conscious of germs and other people and hygiene and stuff like that. But I do expect him to make some type of public concession. He might not say that, I'm quote unquote conceding, but he'll say, I accept the results of the election. I'm looking forward to 2024. But I do not think he will be doing it willingly. That's for sure. I don't expect a very nice handwritten note to be in the Resolute desk like most of the presidents have done.
He might leave something else in there.
President Trump doesn't really do it like that.
You're right. That is Christian Detok, senior White House correspondent for The Daily Caller. Christian, we appreciate your time. Hope we can talk to you again soon. In the meantime, if people want to keep up with the stories that you are working on, how can they do so?
Easiest way to do it is follow me on Twitter, follow me on Instagram. It's @TalkRadio, @TOC Radio. I've enjoyed speaking with you guys today.
Yeah, back at you, Christian.
Yeah, enjoyed it.
Yeah, hope we get a chance to do so again.
I think he's trying
to
take our jobs, Tony. Yeah. You hear his handle there, Talk Radio?
I like it. It's good. I know. It's good to have that in your name, just built in there for you. Thanks a lot, Christian. We'll talk to you again soon.
Be well, guys. Talk
you
soon.
Bet. All right, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we will talk to Christian's co-worker there at the Daily Caller, our friend Virginia Caruta, when we get back to the Weekend Report on 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back to the Weekend Report, 97.1 FM Talk. Tony Colombo here with producer Carl Middleman.
Hello.
And my partner, Chris Arps. Great stuff there from Christian Detok, the senior White House correspondent with The Daily Caller. And as I mentioned, now joining us is Christian's colleague there at The Daily Caller and our good friend, Virginia Caruta. Virginia, how's it going?
Pretty well. How are you?
in 2020... Yeah, I'm as good as I can be. We had just a great conversation there with your colleague, Christian Detok. I want to get your thoughts on what we were just talking with him about, and that is the status of the White House's challenge to the election. How are you feeling right now, more than a week after the election, as we wait to see what is in these lawsuits? How are you feeling about where the status of this election stands?
It's interesting. I don't know what to think, because we've been told from the beginning that voter fraud doesn't exist, except of course when Russians unduly influence an election. But that's not really fraud. That's not the kind of voter fraud that we're talking about here. So voter fraud doesn't exist because there's no evidence of it, and we're not going to look for evidence of it because it doesn't exist. That's been kind of the media's circular narrative on this from the beginning. And so it's very difficult to really determine where you are, because no one is willing to do the due diligence and look for the evidence because we've been told so many times that it doesn't exist, there's no point. So it is interesting, though, to see the number of irregularities popping up. And what concerns me is that if Democrats believe that Biden won by this much and there's this huge mandate that, you know, this anti-Trump wave, then shouldn't they want all of this to be they should want Donald Trump to exhaust every legal possibility and still come out the loser. If they're that confident, why aren't they doing that?
Yeah, it'll make him it would make him look worse to go through all of this and then not have the goods. You're exactly right. Talking to Virginia Cruda from The Daily Caller. Go ahead, Chris.
Virginia, how many people do you think within the Lincoln Project will have jobs within the Biden administration?
You know, I don't know if they'll be able to get any of them through because, AOC is already coming after him. She's telling, you know, so there's that. Now, speaking of the incoming Biden administration, assuming that that's the direction we go, he's going to have a really hard time. He is wedged between AOC and Mitch McConnell, assuming, again, that McConnell keeps control of the Senate.
That's a bad
visual.
And
even if he doesn't, you're looking at a 50-50 split with the tiebreaker being forced to be Kamala Harris. And nobody likes legislation passed by tiebreaker because you know that it doesn't have that much support.
Virginia, go ahead.
Well, McConnell has already said, no, I'm not going to allow you to build a progressive cabinet. And AOC has already said, hey, I heard you were thinking about putting Rahm Emanuel in your cabinet. Better not do it. You know, so he's going to be stuck because he can't make the progressives happy and get it past Mitch McConnell. And he can't get it past Mitch McConnell and make the progressives happy. So Biden's worst enemy right now is the fact that he still has a divided party, and he's trying to unify two parties at the opposite end of the spectrum, and his real problem is in his own house.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier in the show and pointed out the split that was just on display this week between James Clyburn and other more traditional Democrats and the memo put out by the squad. But one thing we haven't talked about too much yet on the show is more local issues in local politics in Virginia.
Right.
You're there in Illinois. We're talking here in, you know, St. Louis County and St. Louis City about restrictions, you know, in the county. Sam Page is threatening putting in a bunch of going back to a bunch of restrictions. And that's exactly what you guys are dealing with in Illinois. What's the reaction where you live in Southern Illinois to what is happening in your state?
Well, you know, I think that it's kind of the same as it has been, because Southern Illinois, we're seeing an uptick in cases. We're not seeing a huge, like, the hospitals aren't overwhelmed. We're not, like, the kids are still in school. I get a notification about once a week.
That must be nice, because my kids still aren't in school, so.
Well, they're 2 days a week, and I get notifications about once a week saying that somebody within the district has tested positive, and you'll get, you know, additional guidance if you're considered a higher risk. Basically, somebody in the district has tested positive, and we don't know that your child had contact with them, is what they're telling us when they send that out. And we have yet to get the additional notification that says we're increased risk or we need to shelter at home or any of that. So, you know, it's just been kind of business as usual. We have a couple cases here and there. We go about our business. And most people, I mean, when you go out to the store, most people are wearing masks. Most of them are wearing them incorrectly, but they're trying. And so that's still a thing. But what I think is interesting is that J.B. Pritzker has been threatening since before the election, saying, hey, you know, the numbers are up. We're going to have to do another lockdown probably. And then he dragged his feet, and he didn't do anything. And now he's talking about doing it again. You know, what happened between then and now is he got the chance to go to a big party celebrating Joe Biden's projected victory.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's allowed to go party. He's allowed to send his family to Florida after the state has been banned from traveling. You know, all these things that, you know, must be nice to be in charge kind of deal. And that's what we're looking at right now. And I think a lot of people are at the point where if we shut down now, we never open our business again. You see a lot of that.
Yeah. And how true is that? How much? I mean, there's a lot of reality in that worry in that statement, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mark Cox had somebody on earlier in the week talking who owned a restaurant, who said that their business went down 90% when they had to only do takeout. Yeah. And most people cannot make a living on 10% of their income. And they certainly can't pay someone else's wages on 10% of their income, much less pay their rent, buy their supplies. And you never know from day to day. Is it going to be 10% today? Is it going to be 5%? Is it going to be 20%? And especially if you're in food services and you just bought your supplies and then all of a sudden your business is
right.
gone.
Yeah.
What do you
That's
do
a great
it?
Point. When you, when you think
you
you're back on track. Yeah. When you think you're back on track and now all of a sudden you're going back in reverse. That's our friend Virginia Caruta from the Daily Caller. Virginia, how can people keep up with everything that you're working on?
On Twitter, at Daily Caller on Twitter, or you can go to dailycaller.com and you can see Detox reporting, my reporting, a handful of other really good investigative guys out doing the hard work every day.
Great stuff. Virginia, thanks so much for your time. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. All right, that's going to do it for hour one of the Weekend Report. Coming up in hour two, we'll talk to Pastor John Michael Brown and our buddy Mike Ferguson when we get back. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk.
It's time for your favorite show. The Weekend Report is on the radio.
Thank you, Barry Woods. And it is hour number two of the Weekend Report on your radio. Thank you so much for tuning in and being a part of it. If you missed anything in that first hour, make sure you download our podcast. The Weekend Report podcast can be found just about anywhere that you get podcasts, but I recommend the radio.com app because once you download the radio.com app and favorite 97.1 FM Talk, you can stream the station 24/7 no matter where you're at. You can rewind live radio with the new Radio Rewind feature, and you can download the podcast of this and every other show right there, and it is free. And when you're downloading the Weekend Report podcast, you can also download the podcast of American Viewpoints, which you can hear every Sunday morning at 5 a.m. here on the station, hosted by our friend Mike Ferguson, who joins us now, putting a little double duty this weekend. Mike, thank you so much. How's it going, buddy?
Oh, it's going going pretty well. Unless you live in St. Louis County, then it sucks.
Oh, no kidding. So at the end of the last hour, we were talking to Virginia Caruta, of course, from the Daily Caller, but also, you know, one of our friends here locally, and she lives in Illinois, Caruta Bakery over there in Illinois. So we were talking about what, you know, they have been dealing with as far as the restrictions put in place by J.B. Pritzker. But as you just alluded to there, what's happening in St. Louis County is just about is no different, really, than what they're experiencing in Illinois. How do you feel about the way Dr. Page is guiding the county?
Yeah, I mean, anybody who looks at Governor Cuomo and Governor Pritzker and Mayor Lightfoot in Chicago as inspirations shouldn't be leading, you know, one of the largest counties in the in Missouri, for sure. No, I went to the webpage of the county itself just to make sure I wasn't reading just hyperbole from people who believe in freedom and were misleading or being hyperbolic about his statements. And it really is unbelievably over the top. You know, you're allowed to have a social circle of this many people that you can meet as required by his order. These are the specific reasons you're allowed to leave your home. I mean, it's just insane. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's like Sam Page looks around and says, wait a minute, there are some small businesses here. I haven't crushed yet. Let me go after them.
And it's not reality. Living in St. Louis County, you know, I people are shopping. People are out and about.
Yeah.
Kids are desperate to go to school. It's not it's not what he reflects in those statements is not reality. We're talking to Mike Ferguson from American Viewpoints. Go ahead, Chris.
Mike, you have been an elected official on the other side of the state, and you know elected officials are very concerned about their legacy or how they're perceived by the public. How should a politician weigh public safety of, you know, they don't want thousands of potential COVID deaths on their hands with them looking in at, and keeping the economic engine of their communities and states and nation going at the same time? How do you weigh that?
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, it's a terrible position to be in for a politician, because when people get scared, they go into do somethingism mode, where they want the government just to do something, even though there's not a politician, there's not a bureaucrat, there's not a policy that's going to stop a virus. It's impossible. So to me, the tough call is to say, listen, everybody, politics and government cannot stop a virus. You know, this is what we can all do to mitigate it and protect yourself, but I'm not going to violate anybody's rights. That's the tough call. Saying I'm going to use government and claim that this is going to stop the virus is cowardice.
Mike,
so the tough call is doing the right thing.
Yeah. Did your experience with having COVID, having coronavirus, and having it pretty seriously, spending time in the ICU, did it change any of your viewpoints? Does it make you look at this and go, no, we should keep things shut down? Or do you, like, how did your experience with it personally affect your views, if at all?
Well, on politics and the role of government and personal freedoms, it didn't change it at all. But it does put me in a position to where I'm saying, listen, everybody, I've been through this, and other than the people who have died, I think I had the worst of it. And so I'm saying definitely take precautions, be responsible, wash your hands, wipe down and sanitize things, you know, don't take unnecessary risks. So I'm one of those who's kind of gotten in trouble on some of my other shows where I'm saying, listen, there's nothing wrong with wearing masks. We politicized masks. Now, scientifically, the actual data shows that they don't, you know, really reduce the numbers. But if somebody's at more risk, okay, fine to do it. But when it comes to protecting people's personal freedom and First Amendment rights, I mean, remember, governments are shutting down churches right now. That's a First Amendment violation. No, my opinion has not changed. I'm more scared of the government reaction to this than I am the virus itself. I was in ICU for 3 days with the damn thing.
Yeah. Go ahead, Chris.
Mark, there's no way you can know, of course, where you contracted the virus. But do you think you contracted it from a large space like a supermarket or some place where there's a large gathering of people, but there's a large space? Or do you think it was somewhere intimate that you may have contracted it?
I don't think it was a large space. When I backdated, my wife and I backdated on the calendar to look at, okay, when did the symptoms appear? When was that window of when I likely was exposed? I took an Amtrak trip to Chicago just to kind of get away for a few days. And so it was either on the train, because, you know, when you have meals on that, they kind of, well, they used to, you know, just assign you a booth with four people and you kind of squeeze in. But I went to, you know, like the Chicago Sports Museum. I went to the Hard Rock Cafe. I went to a blues club to listen to some music. You know, I went to a couple of museums. And so it could have been any of those places. Could have been, you know, a handrail at the coffee shop. Mm-hmm. It could have been, you know, something at the hotel I was at. So I'm
And I guess my
sure
question was, you know, do you think those places should be shut down? I mean, be large places
no,
like
I don't,
that. Is
I,
that where the majority of people are contracting them, do you think?
Oh, I don't think we know where the majority are. Contact tracing is not a bad idea as long as it's voluntary. But no, I don't agree with shutting things down, because data actually shows, and the folks over at the Hammond Institute for Free Enterprise told me this, that prior to all the lockdowns and crackdowns and things, people were responding. The market was responding. People were going out to eat less. They were avoiding big crowds. The data shows that people were actually doing the most people. I mean, there's always some knuckleheads out there, but there was a shift in behavior, more online shopping versus in-person retail shopping.
It's almost like people can think for themselves. It's almost like people can think for themselves and know how to protect themselves and their families, and they don't need to have their hands held and have sweeping dictates that cover massive areas where there's people living in all different circumstances. One more thing about COVID, just my thought, and hopefully I'm wrong on this, but one of the reasons that I question so much and have so much doubt in decisions that are made by officials when it comes to putting in these restrictions is that they say they're doing it because they're trying to protect lives and they're trying to, you know, they're doing it for safety purposes. But I just don't trust politicians. I just don't trust that they're doing it for the actual right reasons. I always think that there's, political motivation driving those decisions, not the safety that they say. I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that I'm over cynical, but I can't help but feel that way. And that's why I am so questioning of the decisions that are made by so many.
Yeah, there are some good people in politics who try to do things for the right reasons. I don't think Sam Page is one of them. But there are a few out there that give me hope from time to time. And, you know, what the challenge is, you know, remember, Sam Page was just elected to a two-year to fill out the rest of Steve Stenger's term. And so this was not a full term, you know. So basically the St. Louis County Republican Party needs to get its act together and actually find a candidate you can take seriously as a person and as a candidate, because they failed to do that this last time. And they basically handed the seat to Sam Page, who's got to be the most hated politician in the region. And they just gave the seat to him. They could have won it.
Got a few minutes left here with Mike Ferguson, excuse me, host of American Viewpoints every Sunday morning here on 97.1 FM Talk. Go ahead, Chris.
And I got a comment more than a question. I really believe the political reasons why these politicians are shutting down these cities is because they'd rather take a knock from the public about businesses being shut down and people going through economic turmoil than news reports saying 2,000 people are dying daily in St. Louis County, you know, and blah, blah. I think they're more worried about that happening than, the public is mad at me because I shut down some businesses and people lost their jobs. I think that's a political calculation that they've taken. They don't want to be the next Mario Cuomo. Or not Mario Cuomo, but Andrew Cuomo.
Or Chris
Cuomo.
Yeah,
but Andrew Cuomo's being rolled out as a hero, and he actually had a ghostwriter write a book about how he handled COVID, even though he literally killed hundreds of elderly people by forcing them back into nursing homes after they were confirmed positive for COVID-19.
Mike, let's switch out to national politics. I can't help but ask, you know, just about everybody that I talk to these days, how they are interpreting what is happening right now with Trump's lawsuits and the circumstances surrounding the election. How are you analyzing and feeling about the situation right now?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with saying, okay, we need to make sure every vote is counted and all the votes are certified before we declare somebody president-elect, but it sure looks obvious that Joe Biden has won the election. Mm-hmm. And the longer I think that President Trump digs in his heels, now not that there wasn't some voter fraud. I mean, Pennsylvania stinks to high heaven right now, and Georgia's doing the right thing by doing a recount of all of the ballots by hand. But at some point, once the states that are in question are confirmed and they are certified, the president has to do the right thing and start the transition.
Yeah.
And then conservatives have to focus everything possible on the state of Georgia and those two U.S. Senate races there.
Let me ask you the same question I asked Chris a little bit earlier. Do you think that it's looking very obvious that Joe Biden is going to be the next president because it's hard to prove the voter fraud, that you'd have to, that it's so difficult to prove all the things that would need to be proved in order to reverse these results? Or is it because it's just simply not there? There's nothing to prove.
Well, I think it's there. I mean, I think in Pennsylvania, I think they are going to end up proving a lot of voter fraud in Pennsylvania. I think they're going to find the quote unquote glitches throughout Michigan that's already, turned over thousands of votes that went to Biden and should have gone to Trump. They also use that same software in some places in Georgia, which is why that hand count is so important. I think they are going to find vote fraud. I think it's a very real thing. It just doesn't look like there was enough of it that made a difference to change the outcome of the election, although they may change the outcome of Pennsylvania, but that's not going to be enough to change the overall results of the election.
A lot of talk this week about what a Biden cabinet, a Biden White House would look like. Bernie Sanders being talked about as labor secretary. Of course, he says he would accept the position. Shocker. Names like Doug Jones, Amy Klobuchar, Tom Perez, Stacey Abrams, Cory Booker, all bannered about Attorney General Elizabeth Warren, possibly Treasury Secretary Susan Rice as Secretary of State. Chris Coons' name is in there as well. Tammy Duckworth's name has been floated around as Secretary of Defense. All of these well-known Democrat names. Last question: how do you feel about the way the Biden staff seems to be shaping up? How do you feel about what that cabinet would look like and its effect on the country?
I would say hold the panic for right now, because once again, those two runoff Senate races in Georgia will determine whether he goes left wing and appeases that AOC Bernie version of the Democratic Party, or whether he realizes that he has to do business with Mitch McConnell. If the Republicans win, if they win both of those seats, Joe Biden's presidency is put in check for the next 4 years, and he's going to he cannot go as extreme as this party's trying to pull him.
It's Mike Ferguson. You can hear him every Sunday morning, 5 a.m., right here on 97.1 FM Talk, the host of American Viewpoints. And you can hear him many other places, filled in for Annie several days this week, which we always appreciate, Mike. Mm-hmm. Always appreciate your time. It's great to talk with you.
You too, guys. Talk to you soon.
You bet. All right, let's take another quick break. And when we get back, we'll talk to our buddy JMB, Pastor John Michael Brown, going to join us on the Weekend Report on 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back to the Weekend Report, 97.1 FM Talk. Big thanks to Mike Ferguson for joining us in that first segment of this hour. Been a great show so far today, talking to Christian Daytok, senior White House correspondent from the Daily Caller, also our friend Virginia Cruda, and like I mentioned, Mike Ferguson. Missed anything, make sure you download our podcast. You can get our podcast just about anywhere you get podcasts, but I always recommend the radio.com app to get the 97 or to get the Weekend Report podcast and every other podcast here on the radio station. Joining us now on the line, as I mentioned, is our friend Pastor John Michael Brown. It's been a while since we have had an opportunity to talk to Pastor on the air, and the reason I wanted to have this conversation on the air is because we're always texting each other and having these very interesting political conversations on our phone. And I was like, we got to do this. We need to get JMB back on the radio and do this on the air again. So, John Michael, always great to talk with you. How's it going, my friend?
Oh, it's great, my brother.
Yeah, good, good. How you? Everybody we talk to, and a lot of people that call into the radio station are extremely politically engaged, and sometimes you can't see the forest through the trees because you're constantly talking to quote unquote experts and people that live mm-hmm. this every day. How has it been, working at the church and just in your general life? How are people in your personal life sort of taking in all this crazy election? And is it front page news? Is it what everybody's talking about? Or is it like we're kind of sitting back and waiting to see, when all the madness is over?
Yeah, I think when it comes to churches, a lot of times it's the elephant in the room, where mm-hmm. we don't. we don't talk. Everybody's thinking about it, but you're not really allowed to talk about it because different people don't want to let their view out. So it's supposed to be a taboo in church to talk about politics. But as people talk about the issues, you know, you kind of get where they're coming from. You're like, yeah, we know what you're trying to say. You just didn't say it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I try to avoid trying to say anything, you know, in the church setting. But I think a lot of the members have plenty of conversation outside of the Sunday service and our Bible studies about all the politics.
Yeah. Talking to Pastor John Michael Brown. Go ahead, Chris.
Pastor, we've seen this past election a focus on evangelical issues, especially on the religious right. A lot of Christians were castigated for supporting and voting for Donald Trump. What's mm-hmm. your opinion on that?
Well, I mean, for me, you know, I when I was less into politics, I was more accepting of, you know, what should be important to us as Christians. You know, I mean, our religious freedoms, obviously. But, you know, when it comes to that big issue for the believer, the unborn lies, and I go, you can't talk about social justice and people being hurt if you do the numbers on how many developing offspring, I'll call it that, developing offspring of people. So, you know, it's crazy that we have these relative morality. You know, I mean, I just was talking to St. John the Philosopher. We text a lot too about it.
Yeah. You
know, St. John the Philosopher.
Absolutely.
My next door neighbor. So we quarantine. We call it quarantine together.
So we have our own squad, right? I mean, like,
yeah.
Behind the scenes, you know, there's a lot of connections there.
Yeah, it's interesting how people, like, they just... things are so polarized and our minds are closed to anything else, you know, it's like, I did the numbers for myself, you know, relative, you know, just to know, cause you know, I don't get really involved in politics. I just kind of interested in truth and consistency. And I looked in 2016, I believe it was, I think it was 231 blacks were killed by police. And then you had, over 2,000 were killed by black-on-black crime, by homicide. And then you had, you know, 200,000 aborted black children. And I'm like, wait a second. Why aren't we talking about that? At least saying, you know, this, if we're talking about life and we're saying that black life matters, why? You know, I know that conservatives and the far right, that's always been a talking point. But I'm just saying, let's look at this practically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're talking about the numbers and you're talking about where would our population be? And we're talking about the intentional and things that are done against the black community. And like that seems pretty intentional.
What's the answer there, Pastor? Why, you know, I'm not saying that there's not a conversation to be had about police reform and that, mm-hmm. you know, that you don't want to look at, you know, possible racist motives in particular cases around the country. That's fine, and I agree. But why is that the focus? What is the answer there? Why isn't that the conversation broadened to include these other issues?
I think as soon as you start mentioning those things, then it's like you're shut off. You're just a far right winger. You're a bigot. You're a race. You know, whatever. Even if you're black, you know, right? Well, how could you think that way? And it's just really a matter about getting to the root. If you truly care about the plight or the circumstance of a people group, right? You have to get to the root of what's causing the circumstance or plight. So the over politicizing of police reform. Well, it's convenient to do that, but what about the guy three doors down from my house that they shot each other over an argument?
Right, right.
You know, they have guns on them. They pull out guns. They shoot over each other at an argument at 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, that has nothing to do with police.
Right.
And that's the type of thing that we're talking about. What are the bigger issues? And it's just a refocus on some minute issue to then try to push a bigger agenda. And I don't know that it's always intentional. I think a lot of people just don't realize that they're very narrow-minded and they've been swayed kind of by some propaganda, a emotional type of argument. You know, it's easy to look at the videos and say, man, I can't believe this guy was killed by cops like this. But you don't get a video of the homicide.
Right.
You don't get a video of the homicide because, you know, people don't show you that. They don't want, you know, they don't want to be a snitch. So. Yeah.
And of course, you never hear about the situations that didn't end badly, that were resolved properly. A couple minutes left here with Pastor John Michael Brown. Go ahead, Chris.
Pastor, Donald Trump received a high amount of the African-American vote this year, especially among African-American women. He doubled his vote from 2016. African-American women traditionally vote overwhelmingly for the Democrat. What are your thoughts on that, and how much do you think the pro-life movement contributed to more African-American females supporting the president?
I'm not sure about, you know, that aspect. I think there's, you know, definitely I think people are being, because there are more voices, there's more opportunity to be able to maybe find in social media, YouTube, you know, some of these other places to hear voices of Black conservatives that then give you different information that maybe you didn't have, you know. And I think just traditionally, I grew up, you're Black, you're supposed to be a Democrat. I didn't know why, really didn't care. I'm Black, so I'm supposed to be a Democrat. And then as you're liberated, you know, you see, you know, like Uncle Tom or, you know, the Larry Elder's documentary, you know, you see things like that, and you actually are given information and allowed to think for yourself. And you're freed from that. I think when you look at the numbers of what Trump has done for the Black community intentionally, I mean, I've had people say more about what Trump did for the Black community when it comes to facts than what Barack Obama did for the Black community directly. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the HBCUs and the First Step Act and, you know, these different things that Trump did intentionally to help the Black community, as opposed to Barack Obama being in the office and being Black. And even now we have the potential of Kamala Harris being the vice president. Just because she has a tan doesn't mean anything is going to change for the African-American community. It's
Pastor,
about policies.
Along those same lines, and this is Chris and I talked about this last week. I think this is very interesting. Do you think that those inroads that have been made that you're talking about, you know, people that are either that voted for Trump that in the past would never have done so, if Trump is not in the equation for the Republican Party, does the African-American vote, does that support stay with the Republican Party or possibly grow? Or is it more of a Donald Trump thing than it is a Republican Party thing?
I think there that many would say in the African American culture that we are, you know, in our actual politics, we're more conservative.
Mm-hmm.
But our culture says that we have to be. It's almost like you're not allowed to leave the Democrat Party. I mean, you know, when you look at the major tenets of the platforms of the parties, the typical Black culture is more conservative, but it's just a taboo. So I think as people are liberated in their mind and their thinking and they're educated and they look at the actual policies and the actual issues, they realize, oh, wait a second, I actually am more conservative. So I think that as long as there's a tie into the real values and there's a relationship, you know, if you're perceived as a racist and a bigot, they're not going to listen to you. But you have to get on boots on the ground within the African American community and the leaders in the African American community that are not exploiting their own. So that's a big issue within the community is the Blacks that are exploiting other Blacks. They're exploiting the issues for their own personal gain. So I think it's very real and very possible that there could still, without Donald Trump, be a growth in Republican voting amongst African Americans.
Gotcha. Yep.
In my experience, it's been a case where when African-Americans, you know, they follow the capitalist formula for success. They get an education, they get a good job, they start to make money, they get a nice house, nice car. There's a tendency for them to turn to end up becoming Republican because they realize now that I have money, they're trying to take my money and give it to somebody else who doesn't deserve it. You know, and I think if you're not, the African Americans that become affluent have a tendency to move over to the conservative party because of the politics, because of the economics, because of that
50 Cent
thing, because
Ice Cube.
What's that?
Yeah, he said 50 Cent, Ice Cube.
He's mentioning rappers he's heard of.
That is Pastor John Michael Brown. Pastor, it's always great to talk with you. I hope we get another chance to do so very soon, my friend.
Anytime, my brother.
You bet. Thanks. All right, let's take another quick break, and we'll be back with more Weekend Report on 97.1 FM Talk. He's putting on a show you're supposed to watch. What'd you? You like it?
He's on a delay. So
Carl says you missed the note.
Never. Never.
You know that there's a delay, so you have to go a half second early.
Oh,
there
you go.
There's no delay here at all.
Welcome back to the Weekend Report, 97.1 FM Talk. Tony Colombo here in studio with producer Carl Middleman.
Hello.
And my partner, Chris Arps.
Look at
interim producer Carl Middleman. Yeah. Or temporary producer Carl Middleman.
We have rotating producers at this point. There's no one producer of the show. It's just a rotating cast of characters.
It all depends on who gets COVID next, whether I'll be here next week or not.
One more segment to go.
If you think I'm lying.
If you missed any of today's show, we talked to Pastor John Michael Brown. We talked to Mike Ferguson, host of American Viewpoints. We talked to Virginia Cruda from the Daily Caller. We talked to Christian Daytalk, the senior White House correspondent from the Daily Caller. All great conversations. Make sure you check out our podcast on the radio.com app. We've spent so much time on national politics on this show. I want to try to talk about some other stories for a few minutes here. This one caught my eye this week. Want to get your thoughts on it, Chris. The McCloskeys back in the news. They are suing the photographer that took the very famous pictures of them pointing their guns, standing in their front yard. And they claim that the images have caused them humiliation, mental anguish, and severe emotional distress. They claim that the photographer, whose name is Bill Greenblatt, he works for UPI.
Very famous local photographer.
Was trespassing.
I know him very well.
Yeah, they accuse him of trespassing on their property when he took the pictures. So they're suing him. I find this very interesting because we know from other stories that we've covered that they use those exact pictures as their publicity pictures, as the pictures that they autograph and hand out to people.
And their Christmas card. So it's going to be their Christmas card.
Yeah, apparently it's going to be their Christmas card. That was another story. So I find it interesting that they're suing about these pictures that they have been using to publicize themselves.
I think this was a tit-for-tat situation, Tony. Prior to the McCloskeys filing this lawsuit, Bill sent them a bill for $1,500 for that picture. And he put it on Twitter, and he made fun of them and really kind of made them look foolish. And it got a lot of traction on Twitter. So I think this lawsuit was a response to that.
I think that Bill's lawsuit is probably, well, you know what? I don't know. I was going to say Bill's lawsuit's more, or his asking for $1,500 for the use of his picture is more legitimate. But then again, I don't know. I don't know the laws about if he was really standing on their property, if that changes anything. I don't think it makes any difference.
That's news. He's a reporter. You know, he's a photographer. I think wherever there's news happening, a reporter has a right to be there to capture it.
He allegedly was in the street. Because he has an amazing camera, so you wouldn't be able to tell where he was standing. But
yeah, if you're a professional photographer, he better have an amazing camera. He knows his rights,
and they're lawyers. They know their rights. I'm sure they'll both get tossed out in court.
Ticketmaster is developing a plan that would put in place a process that would have you would have to present proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test within 24 to 72 hours before you could go to a concert or an event with a Ticketmaster ticket. You just said you think it's a good idea.
I think that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. I think they need to do that for Broadway and any type of live events. Those industries are dying. Mm-hmm. I am not a supporter of them, of you taking having a vaccine and them having a record of that so that wherever you go, you can claim you have a vaccine and don't have to go through any protocols. I think that, you know, is just a bit too far. But, yeah, proving that you are negative two or three days before a concert, I don't have a problem with that.
You know, I would...
I think that's a good idea.
I would definitely embrace something like that way before I would say shut down concerts and shut down theaters. We were talking to our friends from the sanitizer and mask wholesale store on the show last week, Gary Kelman and Jeff Wade. And another one of the things that they have there in their store for venues or for buildings, companies, if they want to buy them, is this machine that you can put at your front door that dispenses hand sanitizer and also and also scans you. Wow. Your forehead and takes your temperature. So you.
I think you're a serious germaphobe if you get something like that. Not to disparage anybody from.
No,
that,
so but, when you stand there and you put your hands underneath it and it gives you a little spritz of the hand sanitizer, but at the same time takes your temperature and then you know then the door and the people there know that you don't have a temperature when you come in. I mean everywhere, like when we were at Disney and every day when I drop my kids off at or my kid off at daycare. The teacher has to take his temperature before he can come into the classroom. So, you know, anything, all of these different ways to, manage life with COVID, but allowing schools and theaters and concert venues to stay open, I'd way rather have that conversation than the blanket shut it down.
I agree. You know, Tony, my wife told me last week, and I was shocked, that the AMC Theater up in Olive, that's right up from our house, I think in Olivet, is that, or whatever little town that is, that theater is shut down permanently. Permanently.
You kind of rolled your eyes at the Ticketmaster idea. What are your thoughts, Carl?
I keep thinking of the movie Outbreak, which we all watched, like, 7 months ago, and they all got a little bracelet that it came with the vaccine. Everyone got a little bracelet, when I saw that,
did
I said,
"The bracelet have 666 on it, Carl?"
No, it didn't. It was just a little yellow bracelet that people wore that let people know that they had taken the vaccine. But I understand that can be easily duplicated, and I don't think anything. It's whether people trust it or not. So if you give your stuff to Ticketmaster, are they the ultimate authority? If you get your test, say you go to a rapid place and you get your test in an hour, are you trusting that they – what if you're false positive? What if you're false negative? All you need – there's a black market right now. I heard it on the Gordon Deal show yesterday that there's a black market now for negative tests. Yes.
How dare you plugging other shows on our show?
it's too late for the radio rewind.
I would still rather have those discussions about putting those types of restriction. Well, restriction's not the
I love
right
the
word.
Idea. I just think it's easily tampered.
Yeah.
If our elections can be tampered with, the vaccination
maybe they set something up that whoever does your test, they email the things to you and to Ticketmaster.
You just said you were against that. You said you didn't want a big list.
No. I'm saying that if you take the vaccine,
right,
and you say that I have a problem with that and using that as a record to get into venues and stuff, but a COVID test, I don't have a problem with that.
Right. A couple sports stories I wanted to talk about. Last weekend, Notre Dame beat Clemson in thrilling fashion in double overtime on national television. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame upsets the number one team in the nation and the limited amount of students, which is still 15,000, that were in the stadium, rushed the field, and Notre Dame officials were getting crushed by the media and certain politicians the day after for allowing these kids to rush on the field and, you know, possibly create this super spreader event. And I want to know from anyone how you stop 15,000 kids that are celebrating a victory like that on national television over the number one team in the country. How you're supposed to stop that?
They should have had water cannons on the side of the field, Tony, to stop them from rushing on. This is just totally irresponsible that the administrators there let this go on. That's a super spreader event times 10.
How about you don't put kids
compared to the Trump events?
Then don't put kids in. Don't let them in the stadium. Then right. If you don't think that that's possible, then don't let them be in the stadium.
The president of Notre Dame already had it because he was at the Amy Comey Barrett.
Yeah,
hearing.
Exactly. So they it's interesting because they knew that this was a possibility, and they said that there was three possible outcomes of the game that they were preparing for.
Win, loss, tie.
Well, one was a loss, which would be no big deal. One would be a Notre Dame victory, but that was a blowout, more of a blowout. So it was like, you know, if you're winning by three touchdowns going into the fourth quarter,
people will go home.
Yeah, it's not as you don't have that emotional outburst of what happens in double overtime where it's
you beat the number one team by three touchdowns. You don't think fans would be going crazy over that?
I'm just saying that there's not that same impulse.
No, some people will go home.
Yeah, there's not that same when the game is not in doubt anymore,
right,
and you can make announcements and some people start to go home and you're already celebrating in the stands that you've got this big victory. I'm not saying that they wouldn't rush the field. I'm just saying that this is what Notre Dame laid out as their plan.
Do you go home early and when your team is winning three by three touchdowns in a Super Bowl?
No, but I don't think you have that same impulse, that same joyous impulse explosion.
I'm going to keep arguing with you, Tony. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I guess. But anyway, it's not even my point. I'm saying these are the three contingencies that they laid out. And this was literally the worst case scenario, was a last second victory, very emotional last moment victory that would cause people to rush the field. And they had these plans in place. If that were to happen, they had security lined up in a certain way that would get the players off the field immediately. And it worked great for the Clemson players because they wanted to get off the field, but the Notre Dame players wanted to stay.
Yeah.
So they didn't get in the line and get funneled because many of them wanted to stay and celebrate. And I don't see how you hold that against any player or any fan. If you want to eliminate that possibility completely, then don't let the kids be in the stadium. But I know from my time as a younger person, my daughter who's going to be in college next year, that, you know, that's part of the whole college experience. And if you want to rush the field because something cool just happened, I'm not going to get angry.
Well, don't worry. Missouri State is not going to be Clemson.
Missouri State's not going to be Clemson. We're never going to have that. We're never going to have that worry for sure. You work for the St. Louis Blues. Have we heard anything from the NHL or from the Blues as far as plans for the next season? I know that
they released
unfortunately not going to have the Winter Classic.
Winter Classic that would have been up in Minnesota on New Year's Day,
right?
I think.
Have they put out a schedule yet of when the season's going to start, or rumors about when?
When basketball did their thing saying that they were going to start on December 22nd, I said, oh, maybe the NHL will be close to doing something. They are not. They have not said anything, but it's a volatile world and they might have something. The last thing I heard is that they're talking about four different pods.
Yeah.
And we would be in the Southwest pod playing like Nashville and Carolina and Florida.
Chris, we've talked a lot about our personal sports fandom and how it has lessened tremendously over the last couple years due to the combination of politics and coronavirus, at least for me. I don't ever see me going back to the same level of passion that I had for sports prior to all of this. Do you think that sports in general recovers back to the old way of things, or do you think that there's been irreparable damage to sports leagues over the last couple of years?
I don't think there's been irreparable damage done. I think it's going to take a long time for the league to get back to where it was. They've pissed off fans with the political correctness and with all the fan activism. that even long-term fans like me have said enough is enough and have walked away. But I think if, you know, they start losing a bunch of money and they realize who really pays the bills and they get back to just playing the game and really doing a hardcore reach-out effort to the fans to kind of say, we're sorry that we let our activism get in the way, then I think it could come back. But it's not anything that's going to happen overnight.
Yeah.
That is going to do it for
and
this week's
show. And they're Ticketmaster.
Yeah.
They're Ticketmaster, so you got to give them a test.
For my partner Chris Arbs and producer Carl Middleman, my name is Tony Colombo. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you back here next week for another edition of the Weekend Report on 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 971talk.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.